Welcome and thank you very much for joining us for episode 169 of the Blazers Edge podcast presented to you today by BlazersEdge.com. I'm your weekend host, Chris Lucia.
And I'm your weekend co-host, Brandon Goldner. If you want to get in touch with the Blazers Edge Weekend Podcast, you can hit us up at blazersedgepodcast@gmail.com. And please check us out on iTunes, YouTube, Stitcher, Google Play. We also have a direct MP3 link on the site. Doesn't matter how you get to us. We'd love to hear from you. And please drop us a rating, a review, a subscription, good, bad, or indifferent. We'd love to hear back from you.
Joining us this weekend on the Blazers Edge podcast is Trailblazers beat reporter Casey Holdall. Casey, thanks for coming on the show, man.
Thanks for having me on, guys. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, this is a show we've been looking forward to for a while. We booked you a few weeks ago. We've been trying to, on the weekend podcast this summer, get a variety of guests, guys who have a different point of view on the team. We've been getting some national guests. We've been getting some other local beat writers. But Casey, you have a pretty, in my opinion, you have a pretty interesting history getting to where you've gotten as the Trailblazers official beat reporter. So I want to start out talking about pretty much how you got to the position where you're at, because I know you graduated from the U of O J school. What was that? Mid-2000s or so?
Early 2000. I think 2002 or 2003, I can't recall. Well, let's see. I graduated in 98, and I took 5 years, so 2003. Is that correct? Yes, 2003 is when I graduated from the J school. Truth be told, I didn't really think I was going to work in media, or at least in journalism, so to speak. My emphasis was actually in video production, and so when I got out of school, I worked full-time at the high school that I went to, at Newburgh High School, as a reading and writing assistant. And then at nights I worked in Vancouver at their public access channel, running cameras both for like land use planning meetings and stuff like that. And also they did a lot of symphonies. We do like live to tape recordings. So I did that for about a year, and then I took a full-time job doing media services, which was one of the jobs I had at U of O. I worked a couple jobs at U of O to pay for school. And I was doing media services at Lynn Bank Community College, distance education, installing projectors, replacing bulbs and burnt out overheads and so on and so forth.
Roadrunners represent.
Yeah, exactly.
BCC grad right here.
Go Roadrunners. Hey, all right. And I kind of thought that I thought that was going to be what I did. And then kind of in my off time, I started writing a blog about the Blazers, because this was when there weren't actually a whole lot of blogs, period, let alone sports blogs. And there was a blog, Supersonic Soul, that I really liked, and I thought they were really funny, and I kind of really liked the way that they covered the team, which, you know, at that point in time, I mean, the idea of getting credentialed or going to a game as a member of the media was, I mean, completely, it was a non-starter. So now I did that for a while, and actually when I was working at Lynn Benton as well, I was also working nights at the Statesman Journal doing Agate stuff for their sports page. For about a year doing both those jobs as well. And that was when SB Nation was kind of picking up, and I had a Blogspot blog, for those of you who still remember Blogspot, that then became a SB Nation blog, which became Blazers Edge, obviously. And I wrote that for quite a while. And then when I had an opportunity to go work at Oregon Live doing both high school sports coverage and some Blazer coverage on the side, I had to leave that, and I kind of turned it over to Dave. Or I mean, it wasn't just me, but I thought that Dave did a great job with the Blogspot blog that he was running at the time, and thought that he would be a great steward for the blog, which he obviously has been. He's taken it to a level that I wouldn't have ever gotten it to, and really did not expect it, which was, you know, it's fantastic to see. Even though I haven't really had any connection to it, I do take some pride in seeing how great of a community he's fostered there at Blazers Edge. So now I was working at Oregon Live for about 2 years. At first, it was mostly primarily high school sports coverage. Then Eric Marantette, who used to write the old Blazer blog at Oregon Live, got a job working for Kobe Bryant. He left. I kind of slid into his spot doing Blazers coverage along with high school sports.
Wait, so hold on. Then, he got a job working for Kobe Bryant?
What
was he doing?
One of the footnotes of Kobe Bryant's career is he actually started his own marketing company with actually a bunch of people from Wieden and Kennedy, called Zambezi Inc. And their thing was they, you know, it was kind of like one of those full, or at least the idea was it was going to be a full service, you know, marketing, advertising, kind of promotional branch of kind of the Kobe brand, which I don't remember exactly all the things they were involved in, but I know that one thing they did do was they were responsible for the lighting in the Staples Center. So like, you know, the lighting design and how they light games and stuff like that. But yeah, no, so he was working, I mean, while it wasn't directly for Kobe, I mean, like, you know, it was Kobe and then, you know, maybe one or two guys below Kobe and then Eric. So,
that's wild.
Yeah, no, kind of, like, and the guy who had the job before that was actually John Hollinger. So it's, yeah, it's been a lineage of Blazer related people and NBA guys going on to work at that job. So, so I did that for about a year and a half, 2 years. And then the team approached me about potentially, you know, kind of coming over to the franchise side and kind of doing some of the blogging that I was doing then while also more managing our website at the time. So I ended up doing that. I thought it was a great opportunity. It was going to give me a chance to focus solely on the Blazers and also get a chance to get on the road with the team a bit, which I think, you know, is gives you a different perspective and kind of a different breadth of knowledge about the team. So I've been doing that now, and I mean, and my role has changed from when I started to now. It was much more kind of, I wouldn't say administrative, but just a lot less writing back then and more kind of keeping the website running. And as time has gone on, that's been, you know, over almost 9 years now, you know, as the web has become more important, particularly for sports and for teams, you know, that role kind of grew from kind of just like some stuff here and there to what it is now, which is basically, you know, covering the team as close to similarly as a third party would, as I can without, you know, really getting people pissed off at me. So, so that's kind of the long short version. Like I said, I've been with the team for 9 years now, covering the team a few years before that. So going over a decade at this point, kind of focusing primarily on the Trailblazers. So, it's been fun. Keep learning new stuff all the time. The teams are different. There was a stretch where it was like our team was kind of the same for when I first started working there, and then obviously the Brandon Roy stuff happened, and then it changed again to more of the LaMarcus and the Jared Wallace and the Ray Felton, and now it's kind of in a third phase, I feel like now, which is really more of a Damian CJ thing. So, you know, even though, you know, the games are, you kind of transform and you notice things over and over again that keep happening or that are kind of recurring threads, the team being different and changing quite a bit personnel-wise and personality-wise and coaching-wise and stylistically has, you know, has really given me something to kind of keep doing. So it's still, you know, it's still, I still find out new things and I'm surprised by things all the time. So it's a pretty good gig.
Do you have a, you know, you mentioned you've been there for 9 years and seen several iterations of the Trailblazers or eras more or less. Do you have a specific fondness for any of those particular eras, or when you look back, how do you view an era like the LaMarcus, Brandon Roy, early Greg Oden era as opposed to before that and since then?
Well, the one that, and I think maybe it's because it was early in my career with the team, so I think you always have kind of maybe a bit of fondness due to that, but that team that had, I think they won 50 games or 52 games. It was, you know, where they had the 13 game winning streak with Brandon and LaMarcus and Travis Outlaw hitting that shot in Memphis that I can still see as clear as day. You know, that was one of my favorite eras just because, like, I was young and I was kind of learning what the job was about, and the team was really young and they were kind of, you know, it kind of felt like I was growing a little bit with them and kind of, you know, learning the ropes and making my bones kind of at the same time a lot of those guys were. So, and the team was great too. And I mean, and we've been really lucky too, in that we've had some really good teams to work with, or at least I've had some really good teams to work with. You know, very, very few instances of guys who were tough to deal with or who just were generally lame guys. So, you know, those first days are kind of the seasons I look back on the most. I think kind of fondly, though. I mean, really, it's outside of, you know, when the franchise changed over management wise and when Chris McGowan took over for Larry Miller and kind of all those changes, you know, that was a tough time just from a employee perspective. But everything other than that has really been, I mean, it's been a blast, you know, and it's a lot of work. It's hard work. And, you know, your family is the one that kind of takes the brunt of it sometimes, because you're out there, you know, covering basketball and having fun. And, you know, sometimes it's that home part that you really have to be cognizant of, and it's really the only negative part. And I don't say that as my home life is negative, because it's not, it's great, but it's just the things I associate with the hardest parts of my job are not technically like the actual job, you know, it's the stuff around it. It's the travel, it's being away for holidays, being away for special events, things like that. So, but those are really small parts. Like in general, things are very positive, and it's always been a really fun job, and I've always felt really, really lucky to have it.
I would imagine that when you first started with your first couple of Blazers blogs, that you were a fan of the team. And one thing about being a fan of the team is that you have an interest in whether or not the team performs well. Over the 9 years you've been with the team, have you felt that fade? I mean, I'm assuming that with everything that you have to do, with as busy as you are, as much as you have to travel, that maybe your vested interest in whether or not the team is successful has faded over time. Have you found that to be the case?
Yeah, I don't know what the exact best way to put it. This is my Terry Stotts impersonation right here. But it is true, though, that, I mean, it's after a while, it's almost necessary in terms of self-preservation, I feel like, because, I mean, and especially in the earlier years when I was working for the team, you know, and you're right, like, it was really more like I'm a fan of the team and I'm also working there. A little less actually when I started working for the team, but definitely the overarching feeling was like, man, this is great, you know, wins and losses. But it's, you know, when you live and die by wins and losses and it's your job, it's like, it's unhealthy, you know? And one, the work suffers, and two, it's like, you can't have it's hard to have your emotions tied up so much in something that you really don't have any control over, i.e., you know, the sport. And when you're just a fan, that's all right. You know, you can get away with that. But when it's your job, and it's, you know, so it's like you're working the 8 hours or 9 hours or 10 hours a day, and you're feeling that, and then you're going home, and you don't really have that release of it being, oh, it's just something I do for fun. You know, that can be difficult. So yes, I have absolutely felt throughout the years that, you know, I'm more vested in the players and the coaches than I am in the actual wins and losses. And by that, I mean that what I root for is for good things to happen to those guys, you know, like and so in that regard, I mean, it's better that you win rather than lose, but it is a bit removed from it. You know, like I'm, when I'm sitting doing my job on press row, and granted, you're not supposed to cheer on press row anyways, but I'm not necessarily thinking like, boy, I hope they win this game, or, oh man, they're going to lose this game. You know, I'm thinking, one, how am I going to approach this post game? And two, more just the kind of the longer view about what it means. What are the implications of wins and losses, and how is this, you know, was it a particularly tough loss or a particularly great win? So yeah, I mean, again, I like to see the team do well. But it's not so much because I'm excited about the team. Again, I want the players and coaches who I have a fondness for to have success. And I know how much work the people, particularly on the business side, put in, and knowing that, you know, a good team is better for that business and will make their jobs in some respects easier. So a lot of, in some respects, I'm just rooting for my coworkers rather than for the Portland Trailblazers, I guess.
Do you find that your work is better received when they do end up winning? I'm just curious, like, when you hop on Twitter, you do your, you know, after game reports. I mean, do you feel like your work is more appreciated by fans if the team does win than if they lose? I mean, I'm just...
Appreciation's an interesting way to put it, because I do think there's an appreciation from fans that I get when you cover things that are hard, or when things aren't going well and you're still trying to kind of not put the best face on it, but just at least be honest about what's happening. I mean, obviously, as you guys know, in our business as well, it's better when the team wins, you know, like more people read your stories when the team wins, you get picked up naturally when the team wins. So in that regard, it's, you get more feedback because more people are consuming your content. But as far as, you know, I feel like Blazer fans too, even though they're super passionate, like I don't know if I'd say we've come accustomed to losing, but I think we know how to lose, you know, like, and it's not like it's going to, people obviously get pissed off about it. And when the team is not playing well and you say something positive, you definitely have people come at you being like, that's BS, you know, like that's not the way it is. You're a shill. And, you know, and I mean, some of these things are not necessarily completely untrue, but, you know, I feel like as I've gotten older and maybe it's just because I don't notice it as much. And maybe it's because I spend maybe a little less time on message boards than I used to, you know, it just doesn't seem like people, they take the losses hard, but it's more of it's more like an acceptance of that journey rather than like a white hot boy, we stink and these guys suck. And I don't want to hear anyone, you know, talk about what's going on with the team, which by the way, I do too. Sometimes it's like when the team is particularly struggling or like if we've been on particularly on like a road trip, if we're just getting beat up left and right, it's like I probably consume a bit less than I would otherwise, just because again, that notion that, you know, I got to give myself a break here a little bit. And once you start feeling those emotions kind of start to rub raw, and I'm sure you guys have felt it too, where, you know, you maybe get up after a tough loss and you're kind of maybe not pissed off at the world, but just in kind of a bad mood, you know, that can start to grate on you a bit. So I know for myself, like I have to be a bit conscious of my mindset when that's happening, because one, it the work suffers, two, it makes you kind of an unpleasant person to be around. And I'm already kind of have some unpleasant person to be around tendencies naturally anyways. So for me, I really need to kind of be present about, hey, you know, it's a game. Things are going to work out in the end. You know, the stakes are not as high as they were seen sometimes. And I think fans kind of, I feel like I get that from fans more too. And again, maybe it's because the people I follow on Twitter are kind of my same age, or I'm just not seeking out some of those more kind of combative opinions that whereas before maybe I did. But yeah.
And speaking of Twitter, what's your policy on muting and blocking? You a block person, you mute person, or you just like a role?
I almost never block people unless they're really like over the top. And I've found too that like there are some people that I don't know if I blocked them unintentionally or not, but that I don't ever recall blocking. Like, in particular, the Suns director of digital who actually just left, I have had almost zero interaction with him. And my boss, it must have been 6 or 7 months ago, he was like, hey, McPeak wants to know why you haven't blocked on Twitter. And I was like, I haven't blocked on Twitter. I have no idea. So, you know, for me, mostly it's, I mute people when it just, particularly more when they're just doing, when they're covering things that like I'm not all that interested in. But blocking, though, I try not to put it this way. I don't block people who I think would otherwise be reading my work anyways. So I guess what I'm saying is the people I tend to block are the people who aren't fans of the team, who don't care about the team anyways, who are only there to kind of, you know, talk trash. And even then, like, I'll go back and forth a little bit. But it's the people that, like, continue to go on and on where it's like, look, man, I don't want you to follow me, so the only control I have over that is by blocking you. So, but again, like I try not to do it very often, and because for the most part, it's like just let it slide off your back, you know. And that's one thing that I've gotten better at, but I'm not still great at, is just kind of seeing things on Twitter and being like, oh, who cares, you know? Because the thing you kind of realize working in the business for a while is like that the person on the other end there could be anyone. And they could be going through anything right now. You know, a lot of times I think to myself, this might literally be a 12-year-old. Why am I getting into a fight with a 12-year-old? And other times it's like, look, like this person might be something going on in this person's life that is really hard. And like, yes, while they're being a jerk right now, like I don't need to add to that. So, I mean, if I can stop myself for a second and just give it a half second thought, usually I'll just be like, you know what? I don't need to block that person. I need to mute him. I just won't respond to it anymore. And usually that's enough. Long story short, if I am blocking you right now for some reason, tell someone who I'm not blocking and let me know, because there's a very decent chance that one, I blocked you for something stupid years and years and years ago, or two, I blocked you accidentally and it was a misstep on my part. So if you really want to follow me on Twitter, which you probably shouldn't anyways.
Is there a way to get off Myers Leonard's block list? Because I heard he rules that with a pretty iron fist.
You know, send your requests to me at Seahold, and I'll take them to Myers. And actually, that might be a decent little story idea. Actually, like maybe an ever so often discussing with Myers people that he's blocked and what we'll take to get them back into those graces. So
I will admit, I am my personal account. He blocked. So I'm one of those people.
I know your personal account now. That makes sense. I won't say what it is, but I do know what account that is now. I don't think people can see this. So yeah. How about that? Hey, look, like I said, I'm learning new things. There you go.
Oh my gosh, Brandon, on the Myers Leonard no fly zone list.
I'm sorry, Myers, whatever I did.
I think Myers too. I think it's probably very similar to where, like, it might have just been he was having a real bad day or a bad game, and it was like, you know what, the hell with this. And Myers is a guy, too, where he's gone on and off social media before, which I think, particularly for guys kind of like Myers who are young players who are kind of trying to find their way, I think social media can be a bit of a detriment. So I would definitely, if I was kind of advising some of those guys, I'd be like, you know what? Don't feel like you really need to have a Twitter account, or if you do, don't feel like you need to check it all the time.
No, and I think the right to be able to curate your Twitter and your Facebook feed is an important part of interacting with social media, so I definitely don't take anything away from anyone for doing that, for sure. It should be whatever experience you want it to be.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's my thing, too, is like when people really get angry about something you tweeted or disagree with, it's like, look, man, like, you don't have to follow me. It's like you're the one with the power in this situation, so... You know, take responsibility for that power, you know, like that. You have the option.
So you mentioned with Myers, and maybe after a bad game or whatever, he was more prone to blocking someone who's given him a hard time, may or may not be someone like Brandon Goldner. But I want to ask you about your personal approach to covering the team on a game to game basis, because there's a lot of ups and there's a lot of downs in any given 82 game season. And so I want to ask your approach to, like, post games. If you're going into the locker room after a close win or a solid victory, as opposed to a bad loss or, you know, the third loss in a row, what are the differences there in your approach to covering the team?
Well, to be perfectly honest, not much. Because and the reason why is partially because of me and partially because of the team. Because of me, because I feel like, you know, I'm at the point I feel like we should try, again, my goal is always to try to cover the team as objectively as possible. And there are always going to be limitations in that regard. But I feel like it's important to at least try. And when you set the baseline as, you know, we're only going to talk about the good things, we're not going to really talk about the bad things, it's like you don't ever even give yourself an opportunity to kind of get people used to that. And by people, I mean people within the organization who might read something and be like, well, hey, I thought Casey worked for us. Why is he saying that? And, you know, so you have to, so your responsibility in that is to actually go in and do the reporting and do the writing so people realize that that's kind of one of your roles. From the player's perspective, the reason it's about the same is because it's a very good locker room. You know, like there are not guys on this team who, after a tough game, if you go and ask them about something that happened that was tough, that are going to get pissed off at you about it. Like, they're really not. There's not a single guy who... CJ will kind of give you some attitude sometimes, but CJ kind of gives you attitude sometimes anyways. So really, it's not... They're about the same. I mean, obviously they're happier when they win, and truth be told, you probably get better answers when they do win. But as far as like a, you know, I want to give this guy space, for the most part, unless it's something that was like really obvious and egregious and individual that happened, for the most part, it's going to be the same for me post game. Like I'm you know, and I'll probably maybe pursue more, maybe an extra storyline after a win, but just again, that's more a function of traffic and knowing that, hey, we're going to get more people to the site when we win, so we should try to be serving up more content to them, than an idea of, well, I don't really want to talk to these guys. So now that would not have been the case necessarily on other Blazer teams that I've covered, particularly the earlier teams and the teams with, you know, the Gerald Wallaces and the Marcus Camby. The Marcus is always great. You know, the Jamal Crawford team, that team that would kind of, I don't know if they were invested as much in the notion of the Portland Trail Blazers, so it wasn't like they were really trying to kind of be more outward about their sharing about their thoughts and feelings and so on and so forth. But this team is not, they're so good with kind of the media and with being honest and with being willing to engage that it's really not all that different from game to game, whether it's a big win or a tough loss. You know, Terry is the guy who, you know, particularly after losses, you have to expect that you're going to get a little more terse responses from Terry than you would after a win. But even that, it's really minor, you know, like that's, and that would kind of, I always try to preface that, you know, even when I'm talking about things sometimes that are the hard parts of the job, in relation to other teams, they're still incredibly easy. You know, they're still a very jovial and understanding nature to this team that I think a lot of teams don't get. And, you know, as they become more veteran, maybe, you know, that goes away and maybe they become a bit more jaded and just a bit more guarded. But for the most part, like they're a treat, win or loss.
Has the way that NBA players approach reporters and the media, has that changed over your time doing it? I mean, again, you've done it for almost a decade. Has the kind of the general way in which players interact with the media has changed substantively over that time, or is it pretty much the same?
I think kind of the one change that I've noticed is I do think that guys are a bit more, I don't know if I'd use the word suspicious, but they're, some guys, when you ask them questions, you can kind of see the wheels turning about, like, what is he trying to use this for? And I think that's from, and granted, that's always happened in some respects, but it's so much more immediate now. So, and what I mean is, you know, obviously if a guy says something and it kind of raises an eyebrow, you tweet that out and then everyone knows about it, you know, 5 minutes later. Before, you know, if it's got to get to the paper or even if it's just got to get to a website somewhere, someone has still got to get directed to it, you know, so you could probably say things that would maybe fly under the radar that definitely will never fly under the radar now. And so I think because of that, and I think having seen some of the issues that arise, that, and particularly, and the one thing I'm thinking about is talking about other players and other teams, you know, like, because anytime a player says something about another player on another team, that's not just over the top kind of congratulatory, people always take it as a slight. You know, like CJ the other day when he was doing that question answered thing and someone was like, you know, can Steph Curry guard you? And he's like, no, of course not. And it's like, people are like, ooh, CJ is talking trash about Steph Curry's defense. It's like, well, I mean, I guess.
Why wouldn't he say that? Of course he's going to say that.
At the very core of what he's saying, I guess that's what he's saying, but that's not really what he is saying, you know? And I think guys nowadays, they can kind of see when maybe someone is going in one of those directions and it might just be a bit more reluctant to kind of talk at length about those things. Now, the other side of that, though, is that when you have relationships with players, that's part of what having a relationship is, you know, is not so much protecting that player, but just trying to accurately present what they really said and meant, you know, it's because sometimes the literal words don't really match up with what you know they were saying.
And obviously, I mean, you have a bucket full of context from being around them enough to where you know.
Exactly. So those are the things where, and I think particularly with people that maybe don't recognize, like if you've only been in the locker room one or two times and you come up and start asking a question that's kind of probing, particularly about like personalities or other players, I think that probably sends off some alarm for players, like, well, wait a minute, who is this guy and kind of what is he getting at? So I've kind of noticed that a bit, but even so, I mean, stuff like that still happens all the time. So it's not like guys are necessarily walking on eggshells all the time, but I think they're more cognizant of how even small line item comments can become larger, and some guys don't really mind. Like Damian's a guy who, like, he didn't care, you know, like if he's going to say what he's going to say. And if you think it's kind of negative, then whatever, you know, like he doesn't care about it. Other guys are a bit more like, I'm not going to get, I know where you're going and I'm not going to give it to you. So like, if you want to say what I know you want me to say, you can say it. I'm not going to say it.
That 2014 first round playoff series against the Rockets, I vaguely remember James Harden was that with the media. There was some with the local media in Portland. Did he have some issue with him or something going on there?
Well, I think what you're talking about is that the Team USA, if I'm picking up what you're putting down here, there was a Team USA mini camp that year after that Damian was at, and both Joe Freeman and myself wanted to, you know, so we went to Chandler Parsons and we're like, hey Chandler, you know, Damian's here, you're working out with him, he hit that shot of you, and he gave, you know, he was funny and he talked about it. And then, you know, you asked James Harden about it and he was like, I'm not talking about that. Which, you know, again, is there right? But that was more a thing where it was like you could tell the difference between kind of a guy's stature and what he values, I guess, from a media interaction. If that's what you're referring to, there might have been something else. I remember in that playoff series, like there was talk about, you know, like, well, we're the underdog in this series. Like, no, we're the underdog, and I think there was a lot of like kind of backbiting back and forth about that a little bit, if I'm not mistaken. So. That might have been what it was too, but
I thought he called. Didn't he call someone a weirdo in an interview scrum or something like that?
That was no, you're right. That was 2000. That was friend Blindberry, actually. He I can't remember exactly what the line of questioning was, but yeah, he called him. I don't know if he called him something like a weirdo or a dork or something like that, and you know, it was one of those situations where, I mean, whatever the line of questioning was, it was very benign. I think what it was, because I was in the, cause I typically don't go into the opposing team's locker room unless like I really have a storyline that I need to flesh out. But it was something to the effect of, I think he was maybe asking him about 3-point shooting, or I can't remember exactly what it was, but no, you're right. And like, it was like a whole big thing. Like, well, who's he talking about? And I remember I was there. So I had some people asking me and I was like, well, it was Fran. Because, you know, you're in the media room and you hear people talking about it afterwards. So, and there are definitely players that don't like the media. I mean, absolutely. They definitely, and there's not probably, it's not an insignificant number of players in the NBA too. It's just, you know, part of your job too is doing the job. And I don't know if actually, maybe it's not part of your job, but you learn it when you're doing the jobs. You know who to go to for quotes and you know who to talk to when you're doing a story that you specifically need to talk to that person. So a lot of times it's more about just knowing the personalities and knowing who would be better suited to answer the questions that you're trying to ask.
Okay, so we got one last question here. I want to ask, because you travel with the team for every road game, regular season and playoffs, right?
And preseason.
Oh, dang, man. So you're visiting, you're visiting all 30 NBA cities at least once, generally twice in any given city. So I want to ask you, what are some of your favorite cities to go to? If you have any time to, you know, do anything in your downtime when you're in a city on a long road trip, and some of the cities where, as Jalen Rose would say, you would catch a nap in the hotel instead of go out in.
Absolutely. Well, one, I don't go out nearly as much as I used to. When I was first doing the job, we were all a bit younger, both myself and Jason Quick and Joe Freeman and, you know, we used to not, I mean, on the road, we'd get after it sometimes. We really get after it at the home there. I mean, I don't think the stories will ever be told, but there's been some nights in Quick's basement years and years and years ago that probably shouldn't have ever existed anyways. But as far as on the road goes, I love New Orleans. I think New Orleans is a great town. It always bums me out when we're only there for one night, but usually typically we're there for a day or two. I love the people, I love the food, I love the architecture. I think New Orleans is great. New Orleans, more than any other city that I've been to in the United States, is like New Orleans feels like it's kind of its own country to a certain extent. I mean, obviously it isn't, but if you just got dropped there randomly, you could conceivably think you were not necessarily in the United States proper. I'm not a big New York guy. I'm not a big Miami guy. I mean, they're fine towns, but I know a lot of people like love the weather, particularly here in Portland. They get stoked when we're going to other cities, and those things just don't really do it for me. I like Chicago a lot. It's a beautiful city. Kind of some, a lot of the charms of New York without all the hustle and bustle. Some of my low key like cities, like I like Minneapolis. I mean, like I wouldn't vacation there or anything, but it's one of those cities where, you know, and for me, a lot of times how much I like or don't like a city is largely based off of kind of the situation, particularly hotel nearness to the arena. So like in Milwaukee in Minneapolis, the place we stay is you can take that mouse trail, you know, 5 minutes and you're at the arena. And the hotel is somewhat nice. You know, I hear we maybe be switching hotels in Minneapolis now, but let's see, where are some of the other places that I like to go? It's two places I don't like. I don't like Oklahoma City. It's improved since I've been going there, but it's just not my scene. No of the Texas stops, San Antonio is my favorite. I don't care for Houston very much at all, or Dallas. Again, they're kind of, both those cities are really kind of the opposite of who I am as a person, particularly Dallas. Houston is big and it's diverse, so that's great. Dallas just seems like it's like a bunch of crazy wealthy people, you know, with bedazzled jeans, and that's not my scene.
Don't be ripping on my bedazzled jeans. Come on.
Yeah. Well, hey, I bet they look good on you, Brandon. But
look amazing.
60-year-old bottle blondes, not so much. And I really like I like going to the Bay. We stay in San Francisco rather than in Oakland, and that's always a great time. It's obviously a great city. The hotel there is really nice. It's right in the middle of kind of the what's going on in San Francisco. So those are kind of some of my favorites. I wish I'd get Seattle back. I wish I had worked for the team when Vancouver was still a team, because I love Vancouver. But I guess those are my really quick ones. I'm trying to think if there's anything obvious that I'm missing. Another thing about Houston too is with as many times we've played them in the playoffs now, it's like I've been to Houston so many times that like I can't stand Houston anymore. It's not my scene. And people, the fans in Houston too are not great. They're some of the I'm not even going to go into it any further. They're some of the they're some of my least favorite fans.
They're very visceral about their fandom, yeah. Right?
Yeah, it's, you know, and Blazer fans can be like this as well, and I can be like this as well. As you know, you tend to view your team through a certain lens, and everything that doesn't conform to that is a conspiracy or unfair. But I feel like Houston fans really kind of take that to another level. And same with Oklahoma City fans too, though they haven't had a whole lot of, I mean, they've had quite a bit of success. So that's a little bit different for them. But, Houston is the only place where I've ever had someone in the stands actually like curse at me.
Like at you specifically?
Yeah. Well, it was, so I was working, it's post game. I'm working away, and my post game, it's, you know, I have to get something posted and then run down to the locker room to do post game. So it's a really tight timeline for me anyways. And this guy is like, hey, hey. And like, I just kept working, and he's like, hey, F you. And I was like, dude, I was like, I'm doing my job here, man. And the thing was too, like, there's a security guard standing right there. She's just standing there, you know, with a dumb look on her face. And I was just like, can you shut this guy up? Like, I'm not trying to ignore you, fella. Like, I'm actually doing my job right now. Like,
and you're literally at work working.
And I need to go. Yeah, exactly. And so that's it is fun to travel to all the cities. And I also don't like Memphis very much, but only because it's so far away and it's in the Western Conference. It's a super long flight, particularly on flights back. And again, like, these are dumb things, you know. This is not like, oh, I like this town because it's got these sights and sounds. It's like, more, it's how long is the flight? How long is the bus ride from the airport to the hotel? How nice is the hotel? How close is the hotel to the arena? And how often does the NBA maroon us there at the end of a 5-game trip and then forces us to fly back 4.5 hours in the middle of the night. So those are dumb kind of things. So, and truth be told, like, as I've gotten older as well, I don't really do as much stuff anymore. Like, when I'm in a city, you know, for the most part, unless I've kind of planned ahead or if I have a friend in the city, I'll maybe go out. But for the most part, I'm standing in the hotel room and working or, you know, watching reruns of Seinfeld and
yes,
other bric-a-brac.
I can totally relate to you on that, particularly with the Seinfeld thing. Casey, I want to say thank you very much, man, for coming on the Blazers Edge Weekend podcast and being so generous with your time.
Well, I do appreciate it too, guys. And I enjoy your work. And I really appreciate everything that Dave and Blazers Edge has done. And I enjoy all of your content.
All right, that is going to do it for episode 169 of the Blazers Edge podcast. We'd like to thank you very much for joining us this week. And we'd also like to thank Portland Trailblazers beat reporter Casey Holdall for coming on the show.
Yeah, for sure. It was great to have Casey. It was a super fun interview. If you want to check out our intro and outro beats are brought to you by Odar. His work can be found at soundcloud.com/Odar Beats. Be sure to tune into the Blazers Edge Midweek podcast with Dan Maring and managing editor Dave Deckard. And for Chris Lucia, I'm Brandon Goldner. And remember, if you have one of those candles that's battery operated and has a switch that you flip on, don't try to use the lighter to light it. Don't be ripping on my bedazzled jeans. Come on.